Let's talk. John Brown. The Gambler, my secret life in TV, betting and taking the biggest chance of all. It's a darkly funny, unexpectedly moving story of a man chasing his big wins, not on just some of the most left field bets imaginable, but on love itself. To tell us more about the book, The Gambler, is the man himself, author of The Gambler, Rob Ferber. Rob, good morning to you, sir.
Morning, Charles. Thanks for inviting me on.
Pleasure's all mine. Presumably you are somewhere in Las Vegas, you know, one of the high rollers being comped at the Bellagio, that sort of thing.
Sadly not. I live a very quiet and peaceful life in a Cambridgeshire village here in the UK.
So tell me a little bit about your background and the book is The Gambler. So everybody's saying, I bet he's going to play sort of Kenny Rogers now at the end of this. But is this high stakes gambling like we alluded to in the little introduction? Is it Vegas? Is it with the greatest, I can see you and I'm not seeing the sort of the big rhinestones here, Rob. I'm not seeing the sort of the Texan hat and that sort of, you know, you got to know when to hold them sort of situation.
No, it's not. It's not quite like that, Giles. It's essentially a true story, apart from some small artistic license I cunningly apply.
You're right.
About a bloke who thinks he's discovered the path to untold riches, betting on crazy stuff like Eurovision, but who then decides to take an even crazier punt on this long-distance romance with a Russian woman. I suppose I discovered this niche of TV betting, as we call it,
right,
that gave me a significant edge over the bookmakers. But all the analysis came at a cost, really, as I ended up living a very solitary existence. And I felt like I was almost risking missing out on real life. So, yeah, I decided to take this huge gamble in my personal life, flying off to Russia in search of romance and not really knowing what lay in store. And that was back in 2011.
Right. So, I mean, TV betting. So, I mean, this has been a news item about, you know, they wanted to bring in some sort of stopping people having gambling machines and, you know, one-armed bandits. Probably don't have those anymore. It's just showing my age. But you're betting. It's not even spread betting or sports betting. It's TV betting. Now, explain to me a little bit about what on earth TV betting is.
Yeah, it's this niche in the betting world, and it's actually an underreported world, which is why I thought the book would be of interest, because it's a very colourful and entertaining aspect of betting that doesn't really get any coverage. Everything from Eurovision and Strictly Come Dancing, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, Dancing on Ice, you name it, really. And it also includes things like the Oscars, Primetime Emmys, which is coming up shortly. If you put in the analysis, you can sort of give yourself an edge. And that's what I've done over all these years.
I mean, with the greatest whatever, because I'm coming at this completely cold, as it were, how do you put the analysis? Because I don't watch TV. I don't watch reality TV. So I've got, I've got not a clue. So how on earth do you put in something like I'm a Celebrity? Do you put in I can understand sports betting because you know certain things are going to happen, et cetera. You know, well, the going's good to firm, et cetera. As last time I looked, last time I heard, you know, the going wasn't sort of particularly good to firm on I'm a Celebrity, Rob.
Yeah, I suppose it's because I'm a journalist. I've worked as a journalist for over 30 years. And I was working from home as a freelancer. And this was when reality TV was suddenly booming, sort of in the early noughties. And I was watching these shows like Strictly Come Dancing. And, you know, you look at the profile of the contestants, you think about who's watching Strictly Come Dancing, who's voting, and you think, well, hang on a minute, I think I can kind of work this out. And it went from there. It was a bet that I struck on Darren Goff to win Strictly Come Dancing back in 2005, believe it or not, 20 years ago.
Right.
And things sort of went from there. And then I discovered Eurovision. And, you know, that's a serious analysis that you have to do there. I mean, that last 5 months for Eurovision, serious Eurovision traders, you know, we start around Christmas time and you have all the national qualifiers. You know, I'm tuning in, watching the Moldovan national final and these sort of things. And it is genuinely 5 months of relentless study leading to the grand final, you know, in May.
I just can't believe that you just said serious Eurovision traders. Like, there's this subdivision of a subdivision who are like, right, all right, boys, what we're going to do is we're looking at, you know, Azerbaijan, not a chance, but look out for the Moldovan semis. My flab has never been so ghasted, Rob.
That's the beauty of it, Charles. And, you know, that's what I've written about in The Gambler. And I think it is, it's a fascinating world that's never really been talked about before. And genuinely, yeah, there's a whole group of people that you know, take it very, very seriously and put in a lot of analysis.
Here's the thing. Because you're a fully trained journalist, because you spend a lot of time watching TV, and I was a freelance journalist in London. I spent an awful lot of time watching soap operas back in the 90s at lunchtime, Fatal with Chocolate Hobnobs, again, Fatal. But if you're a journalist, you know the value of a good backstory, you know. So therefore, if a contestant has got a one-legged grandmother from whatever who came over on a, you know, on a pedalo from Albania or something, you know, and that supports them all, and this is her one choice, and they go to the chip shop and whatever, that's, if they've got that compelling backstory, Rob, that must set off your bet, you know, everybody's betting things at that one.
100%, yeah, that's the spidey senses, you know, really alerted to that sort of thing. Yeah, we see it all the time on Strictly Come Dancing. You know, Rose Eiling Ellis, you know, deaf. You just thought, now this could be a really enchanting story for her, and it was, and she won the show. And then last year, of course, we had Chris McCloseland, you know, a blind guy, and again, you thought that this is potentially something that the audience is really going to latch onto.
Yeah.
And it did, and he won. So, yeah, you're dead right. You've got to look at those backstories all the time.
I presume it's not just winning either. You go, okay, well, I think they're going to make the semis, or you could have, presumably, reverse betting. Then, like, you know, our pre-mentioned Moldova not even getting through to the qualifiers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, we call it laying in the betting and trading world. You know, you go onto the bet, just the bookmaker taking the money from other people who, you know, want to make that bet that you don't think is going to be successful. So, yeah, that's a big part of it.
Talking about laying, pandas at Edinburgh Zoo.
Yeah, one of my favourite chapters probably in the whole book. Yeah, one of my finds. I'm always looking for something, you know, a little bit offbeat, a little bit quirky. And that was one that jumped out at me. And I read up about all these scientists that were involved, and they're taking it very, very seriously. And I mean, I don't want to give the story away, but it's an entertaining chapter in the book. Eat, Shoots and Leaves is the chapter title.
Yes, indeed. Right. Moving swiftly on, because we're not even hit 12 o'clock here yet. We're not even hit 11 o'clock here in Spain. I mean, you talk about, I mean, we're having a laugh with this, but you know, as with all these stories, I mean, gambling, it can be an addiction. You know, heaven knows we get enough warnings about it. And you mentioned that it became a very solitary existence, because, you know, we can cut ourselves, especially since that thing that we cannot mention that happened 5 years ago and kept us all inside for a bit. You know, you can sort of isolate yourself away from the real world. And although highly entertaining, because it's read to this book, I mean, it is a very, I mean, listen, journalism is a very peculiar way to live your life, full stop. But but I mean, this is a very, very peculiar way of living your life, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing the freelance journalism, and it wasn't actually, you know, making me that much money. So, you know, when TV betting came along out of the blue, really, you know, I was just in the right place at the right time. I could genuinely, you know, make more money from that than I could from the freelance journalism. And you do have to work at it, though. Yeah. You know, it's a serious business, and you put in a lot of hours, you know, just trying to find those clever bets.
I mean, a very good friend of mine used to play online poker literally for 8 to 9 hours a day. It was his job, and that's how he made his money. What sort of figure are we talking here, Rob? I mean, are we talking like decent sums of money?
Well, you know, again, in the book, I highlight, you know, some of my wins over the years. You know, Eurovision, always looking for a five-figure profit each year at Eurovision. Haven't always achieved the five-figure profit. And I had one year that I go into in the story that went completely the wrong way, and I lost quite a lot of money. But, you know, that's sort of an occupational hazard. You know, as long as you're minimizing those times when you lose and you maximize those times when you win, you're making money in the long run. And that's really what I've managed to do over all these years.
Fascinating. So tell me about this bet on Lurve, he said, with love spelled L-U-R-V-E, obviously.
Yeah, I think the against the odds love story, it really ups the stakes in the gambler, because it puts something far more important on the line. And, you know, the story, it transforms into this seat of the pants roller coaster ride through culture shock, visa red tape, and Eurovision trading drama.
Right. Okay. And so set the scene. I mean, I don't want to give the whole thing away, because obviously we want people to come out and buy the book. But so you get in contact, they contact you. Are you doing some research into Eurovision then in that case? And suddenly you discover what could be a potential love match, quote unquote.
Yeah, it was that. I thought we had a connection, but when I took the flight to Russia, it really was a huge leap of faith, I have to be honest. But I just thought, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I just applied my gambler's mindset. And I think a key ingredient in the book is when British reserve meets Russian bluntness. You know, early on, she accuses me of being timid in the bedroom, for example.
Right.
Which I felt was a bit harsh. You know, I was just being British.
Because the Russia is a nation, and Russian women are a nation of people who don't do small talk, do they? There's no beating around the bush, you know. They are direct and to the point. Was this? I mean, sort of. You met online talking about gambling and stuff, and then you decided to go quote unquote all in. And get, I mean, you must have been worried that if when you touched down in wherever it was, in the former Soviet Union, that there wouldn't be anybody waiting for you at the actual airport.
No, to be honest, I was pretty confident she would turn up. But yeah, it was an incredible experience, really. And I just thought it tied in really well with this crazy betting life. And yeah, you know, the gambler sort of tells the story of how we managed to, you know, forge a relationship together without, again, you know, I don't want to spoil the ending, but.
But the other thing is the fact that, you know, because again, Slavic ladies tend to like a man who is soluble, who's got a decency, a standard of living in the main, etc. And that's, you know, so they like the shiny things. With the, shall we say, swashbuckling nature of being on betting on whether pandas are going to mate successfully, perhaps that's not perhaps the solid foundation that perhaps a young lady who's looking for a stable financial base would be attracted to, Rob.
It's very true, Giles. And yeah, there's been some ups and downs along the way. Let's put it that way. And again, I cover it in the story because I did have this tough Eurovision year.
Yeah.
And then I sort of had to slowly but surely break the news to her that, you know, finances weren't that great, and, you know, we might have to pull in the purse strings a little bit. So again, it's a funny chapter in the book. You know, it's an authentic warts and all portrayal, I would describe it as.
But when you've got to describe it as, yeah, darling, the reason we can't go to Cyprus on holiday is the fact that basically it's because Kazakhstan went out in the qualifying rounds of the Eurovision. That must have got a proper death stare from her.
Yeah, I mean, you've described this chapter in the book very, very well, Giles. And I'd like to think it's a laugh out loud read because, you know, I'm very honest about certain situations between the two of us.
Now, Tony Parsons, who knows a thing or two about writing and about being male, to put it mildly, and gosh, anybody who's been out, only Julie Birchall deserves at least the George Cross. But what I'm saying, I mean, Did it suddenly strike you saying, hang on a second, I can combine these two or even three worlds, which is basically gambling, dealing with Russian ladies, and journalism together, put it in a book? Because it's been described as, you know, basically fever pitch, isn't it? Which is high praise indeed, because people tend to forget, because it's like 30 years ago since fever pitch came out. But it totally changed the way that we looked at football from a writer's perspective. Because before then, you know, nice young writing people like ourselves didn't even look at the association football, did we? So, you know, did you suddenly think, hang on a second, there is a book in here?
Yeah, I did. And incredibly kind review that Tony Parsons gave me there.
Yeah.
And it all came together, and, you know, it documents really the last 20 years. So, you know, it goes right back to 2005 and coming through almost to the present day, really. I describe it as part entertaining betting memoir, yeah, part culture clash comedy, part heartwarming love story.
Presumably, are you still involved in the betting market? And if so, how did you find the time to actually concentrate on putting the narrative together? I know you're a trained journalist, Rob, and, you know, they're supposed to fall out, but as you know, and you know, you have to get up early and do the nifty 250 of words even to get your brain going, and at the same time you must be thinking, hang on a second, there's an aquarium in Dusseldorf that's got a new species of fish, and if they breed, I'm in the money here.
No, you're right, Charles. Yeah, it's you know, it's a very, very busy, you know, busy existence I have. I mean, writing the book, it took me many years to piece it all together. And yeah, my bread and butter on a daily basis is trying to unearth these, you know, these great TV bets, or special bets, as we call them, like the two pandas mating at Edinburgh Zoo.
Must have been, what was the feeling like, though, when it actually arrives in print? And you've got it in your hot little hands, and then the reviews start to come in. It must be incredibly sort of heartwarming, or a feeling like I've actually sort of done it, because now you can say to your beloved, you see, there you go, it was worth it in the end. Look at me, I'm a published author. You should probably say when we get the Hollywood rights, but anyway.
You're so right. Yeah, I mean, that was a really special moment. I mean, it came out on July the 17th. Mirror Books sent me some advanced copies. And, you know, we got the delivery here, and opened it up, and there's your book, and you're holding your book in your hand. And yeah, it's a really special moment, because I never thought that day would arrive, to be honest.
So what's next then? Because you see, you've done one. Is it going to be double or nothing here? Are you going to go for another book, do you think? The Gambler 2, just when you thought it was safe to go back to the pandas?
A good question. Yeah, I think there might be some scope in a follow up. I've got to give it some serious thought. But I need to see, you know, how this one does. You know, hopefully people enjoy it and they want something more.
Well, congratulations on the book. It's called The Gambler, My Secret Life in TV Betting and Taking the Biggest Chance of All. I have to do that, and that's the accent. It's by Rob Ferber. Rob, if people want to follow you and say lovely things to you, do you do social media? Is there a website? Where can people find more information about you?
I do, yeah. I'm on Twitter, at Ferris Day Off. I use that title because I love the movie.
Very Ferris, good, yes.
Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
At Ferris Day Off, yeah, that's the Twitter handle. My website is entertainmentodds.com. Founded that back in 2009, doing all the TV betting analysis on there. And,
And you'll be able to, and listeners, if you want to order the book, you can go onto our own virtual bookstore. You'll see a picture of the front cover of the book on our virtual bookstore. Click on that front cover, and a well-known delivery service will be winging its way to you wherever you are in the world. The book is called The Gambler, My Secret Life in TV Betting. It is by Rob Ferber. Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thanks very much, Charles. You too.